Hi, this is Nick Orton for the Think Big podcast, and today I'm with Clint Jones, who's the owner of four gyms, the best known one probably Future Fitness, also the Workout Mill, Capital Gym and Apollo, all in Coventry. Hi, Clint.
Hi, Nick. You all right?
Yeah, and what I wanted to do today, Clint, was just talk about how you actually got into gym ownership. You know, where did it all start for you? So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, when you were working at the factory?
Yeah, I was working at Jaguar Cars from when I was 16. Got into bodybuilding when I was probably 20, 21. Started doing my first shows when I was 24. Really got the bug for it. Loved to open my own gym. Looked high and low around Coventry for buildings. Nothing really come up, and then one day a guy said to me, "Oh, there's a gym for sale in Coventry, if you're interested."
Okay, and just before we go on to that, for those people that don't know, Future Fitness in particular, like I say, probably the gym that you're best known for, is really a phenomenal gym, and I think it'd be really good a little bit later to talk about why it's got such a great reputation, how you create a gym that's got the membership and the atmosphere that Future's got. But before we get on to that, obviously you got this opportunity to buy a gym, so that was in 1990, I think.
Yeah, that's correct, 1990.
And what sort of brought you to get this gym?
It was the one that was available at the time, so okay. I was desperate to get in there.
But it wasn't called Future Fitness at that time?
No, it was called the Forge Gym.
Okay, and I think it was quite a funny story behind Forge Gym and, you know, why it came to be up for sale.
Yeah, I mean, the owner at the time, he came to own the gym because before that, the previous owner got himself in a bit of a financial difficulty and decided to George, sorry, I'm trying to do a live interview, I think it's running around.
Go on, carry on, Clint. It adds to the authenticity.
Yeah, okay. So that's just my staff keeping on top of the gym, keeping it nice and clean and tidy, which is one of the things you need to do when you own a gym. He got in some financial difficulties and decided to go up the road and try and do an armed robbery, which went horribly wrong. Obviously, he got locked up and a couple of members of staff took on the gym. Ended up with ownership for one of the guys. He'd had enough, got bored. Wasn't his thing, so along came me.
And obviously you saw the opportunity, but if I'm right in saying you didn't do a business plan, you know, it was more intuition and love of the sport that got you into that position.
Yeah, definitely. I think if I'd have sat down and done what you call a modern day thorough business plan, I'd have probably ran the other way myself. It was just something I just wanted to do. I probably didn't put that much thought into it, but the thing I did put into it was a lot of passion. I knew I could be a success in it just because of my standpoint in the city at the time. There's a lot of leading competitive bodybuilder. A lot of people came to me for advice and help. I think that's how you know I made it work in the start.
And how did you get the money together then to actually buy into the gym?
Well, fortunately, as it happens with property, at that particular time in the late 80s, there was a little bit of a jump in house prices. I had a little bit of equity that I used for a remortgage. I had a little bank loan, had a loan off the person I was buying it, so I had little loans here, there and everywhere, which was quite stressful. I tried not to write it all down because, again, sometimes it looks worse on paper. I just thought I was just going to get through it, make it work. And because of that, I ran the gym solely on my own. I had one member of staff to help. I was here from the moment it opened to the moment it closed for at least 5 years.
That is incredible commitment. And I guess for anybody that's listening, you know, they're told to write a business plan and obviously to take risks, but you really just basically went for it.
Yeah. I'm a little bit like that sometimes. If I see something I want, I'll just sort of go for it. But yeah, My other gyms, I've been a little bit more cautious and looked at the numbers, but that's just through experience, from my first experience.
You did show a lot of business intuition, though, when you bought the kit for this gym.
Yeah, my original kit was bought from a repossession company from... There was an equipment company that went bankrupt, and they had roughly about three gyms worth of equipment, which I purchased the whole lot, sold half of it at a small profit, which paid for, well, which meant that my gym was kitted out basically for free.
And that kit, basically, stocking the gym with that great kit meant that you pretty much doubled the membership overnight, if I'm right.
Yes, it did. That was, back in the 90s, that was probably the biggest gripe, was the lack of quality equipment available in gyms, especially to lads that were training heavy, wanted to do the bodybuilding. We were all sort of led by American gyms, but we didn't have that same type of quality of equipment.
And for those fitness professionals who are looking to start a gym or have already got a gym, yeah, how important is the kit that you have got in the gym?
Personally, I think the kit's paramount for the type of gyms that I run. For people, if you want to attract people that are going to be here when it's snowing, raining, -5, they're the people that you need. They're your bread and butter, and those type of people, they will go to places where they've got good equipment to train on.
And you were telling me a little bit about how you work the layout of the gym.
Right. Yeah, I've always found that the layout of the gym is quite a crucial factor. Obviously, you don't want a squat rack or a deadlifting area close to reception. It can be very intimidating. A lot of people think it's just women, but it's actually guys, when they go to a gym for the first time, it's quite a scary proposition for them.
So what you're saying is it's really important where you put the equipment for people when they first come into the gym.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for example, in this gym, you've got plate-loaded equipment when you come in, but none of the heavyweights that might put people
they're,
off.
They're not on view, the heavyweights. They're there, but they're not on view. When we do a tour of the gym, people specifically want that. It's there, we show them. There's less noise in the reception if your heavy equipment's either at the other end of the gym or on a different floor around a corner. That makes a big difference.
And you swap the kit here quite regularly, don't you?
Yeah, we're always updating the equipment, always got a finger on the pulse. It's like everything in life is constantly changing, probably more so now than ever. So we like to keep everything as fresh as possible.
And interesting you should say that, because I think in the early days, you know, gyms opened later.
Yeah.
So like a full opening day would be typically 10 to 10.
Yeah.
Now obviously things have moved so that gyms
exactly,
open a
yeah.
lot earlier.
People work different hours. The whole culture of the way everybody lives their lives now is a lot different. It's not a new, if a gym opened back then, 1990, at 6 o'clock in the morning, there'd be nobody there till 9 o'clock, because nobody trained then at that time.
And okay, just going back to the sort of development of Future Fitness, because initially you called it Flex Gym.
Yeah, because at the time that was very much in vogue, was bodybuilding. That's what this gym was built on. It was built on a bodybuilding concept. That's what I was doing. That's what the majority of the lads were doing in here. But as we expanded and I've actually built three extensions on this gym, had to open it up to a wider audience, retaining the weights side of it and the bodybuilding. The bodybuilders have stayed. We've got a lot more cardio equipment now, a lot more fitness equipment, and bodybuilders now do more cardio than what they've ever done before. Back in the 90s, and that cardio was seen as something you only did for the last few weeks before a show. Now a lot of bodybuilders do cardio all year round, so the cardio equipment is used by everybody now.
And when you decided that you want to broaden the visitor, the member that
yeah.
came to the gym, it was then that you changed to the name Future Fitness.
That's correct, yeah. It was 1999, felt that the name Future Fitness lended itself to the future. It was a name that would never date, and it was a bit softer. Funnily enough, like I was saying earlier, that the name Flex now would probably still work, because again, in the last 10 years, muscle's become a lot more acceptable, a lot more mainstream.
Okay, and I was mentioning earlier about the phenomenal atmosphere you've got at Future Fitness. What do you attribute that to?
Partly because we've opened it up, so we've got a lot more diverse range of people that train here. From we've got lads, young lads that like young promising, like rugby players, footballers, right the way through to people that have retired and pensioners, and that's specifically because we've got the space. We had the space to expand the gym, put more fitness equipment in, so there's a more diverse range of stuff for people to do. The name's a bit softer, but we've retained the bodybuilders as well. And the atmosphere then, you've got a good blend of different people in the gym, which generates a good atmosphere.
And for those people that are interested in having their own gym or developing their gym, what other areas of business are important for them to consider?
Well, as everybody knows, the supplement industry is huge, the secondary spend industry is huge. We all know that supplements have gone up in price. It is getting harder. You've got your online market as well to compete with. Look at your own brands in terms of your club names. Get all your clothing done, shakers. And there's a lot of good secondary spend to be had there. And also your single servings, your bar area is very important. You know, mixing different drinks, pre-workouts, post-workouts. Even maybe if you've got an area where you can actually do food as well, that'd be a good. But obviously you've got other things to think about, like your hygiene certificates and things like that. So that needs a bit more planning.
Okay. And you mentioned about branded clothing and selling things that are specific to your gym.
Yeah.
You've developed a great brand with Future Fitness and your other gyms. For other gym owners, how do they go about, you know, creating that brand awareness?
First, you've got to get the name, then get a good logo designed, and then you can. There's lots of ways you can use it as part of your marketing tool. You get it put on t-shirts. You give free t-shirts with every membership. You get free t-shirt, tubs of protein. You get people wearing it. That's the key, is getting people wearing it. It's funny when you get lots of people wearing it, the people that are not, they want it, and that's just the way marketing works.
Okay, well, it's been fascinating to talk to you about the gyms. Thanks very much for your time today, Clint.
Okay, cheers, Nick.